It's Anna, David. Who else would it be? That'd be weird if it was somebody else. I am the host of After Party Pod. If you are listening, you ideally know that. And I'm super grateful. I have been getting super nice emails about this. I can't even tell you. Sometimes from people who are drunk. Sometimes from people who are not drunk anymore, used to be drunk, find this podcast helpful in that. And some really, really nice reviews. I tend to discuss the not so nice reviews, which is just insight into how my head works, which is to say that I think I notice there are good reviews, but I know I notice when there are bad ones. And a lot of you send me emails saying that these things that I share with you that the bad ones say are not true. And I appreciate that. But I wanted to call out some people who have given really nice reviews. Elise is special. I know Elise. We're Twitter friends. Hey, Elise. A-L-Y-S-E is how she spells her name. Loosh S-D. Tristan Powers. L-E-L. JVV1997. These are just some of the people that have been so supportive, and I'm so grateful. And the podcast is growing. Yeah, a lot. And that's thanks to you telling your friends and continue to tell your friends, because that's the best way for people to find out. But you can also tell strangers, and you can tell strangers by subscribing to this podcast on iTunes and by giving it a 5-star review. It's huge. It's super important. I will love you forever. Now, what else do I want to tell you? Well, this episode is sponsored. I'm not starting again. This episode is sponsored by Audible. So you can get your free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial by going to audibletrial.com/afterpartypod. There are over 150,000 titles to choose from. And I'm a big fan. I download books all the time. I've told you that. I even have one that's on there, and it's really short, but this is not about that. Go get your free audiobook, and you can get it through us, which I love personally. Now, what else? What else? What else? Lots of stuff going on. The site After Party Chat is growing at an exponential rate. We're now taking ads. It's all very exciting. If you haven't checked out the site, please check it out. It's a great adjunct to this podcast, although truly this podcast is an adjunct to it, because it is merely one of the posts that goes up every week, and there are 5 posts a day. So there is that. And yeah, I had a good weekend. I had a campfire party, which is to say that I was only serving foods that could be cooked over the fire pit in my backyard. And that means that there were lots of s'mores, and that there were, I got these sandwich presses so that you could put 2 pieces of bread and cheese and make a grilled cheese. And it tasted better, and it was really cool, and people enjoyed themselves. So that's some sober fun. Oh, we played Heads Up. Have you ever played that? It's that super fun app that's like charades. Anyway, let's get to our guest, shall we? Jeff Ulrich is our guest today. Now, Jeff is huge in the podcasting world, so you may know him. Maybe you're listening to this because you know him. He and Scott Aukerman started Earwolf, which, as far as I know, is the biggest comedy podcasting network in the world. It's only been around since 2010, but in that time, they have just gotten to be huge. They have Comedy Bang Bang, which is a TV show also on IFC. They have Kevin Pollak's. Anyway, they have a bunch, but that's not the point anymore, because Jeff has just left his own company by choice. As he says, he fired himself. So he is the youngest retiree that I know, but he has all sorts of new things planned. And you know what? He's surrendering. We talked a lot about that. He's sober a couple years, had an interesting story in that he started late. I mean, late. He was one of those like pedantic, don't drink people, but then he realized that he wanted to. And so he stopped saying that and just started drinking, and has a really interesting story, which he is about to tell you. And so I give you Jeff Ulrich.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere. I'm very lucky, because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
Okay. Hey, Jeff.
We're starting?
Yeah, we start cash.
Hi, Anna.
You're the one who told me we were starting.
Oh, no.
Did you expect like a very professional intro?
No, I didn't have any expectation.
So I'm glad you're doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You were kind of the guy who introduced me to podcasting. I knew nothing about it until the day that I sat down
really?
With you and
nothing?
Jake. Really nothing. I know. I really faked it that day, didn't
yeah, I didn't think that.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have been like the king of podcasting and now are the youngest retired man I know. Is that the case?
I mean, I say I'm retired because I don't know what else to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking for work. I'm not looking to start a new business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of retired.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, like I don't have enough money in the bank to live for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to have, you know, this company, my company make money and give it to me, or I'd have to sell it. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but I feel retired and I don't know what else to call it. So that's what I call it.
Is that freeing? Liberating?
It's everything. Like it is. I mean, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so I still have anxieties around things. And here's the thing. I don't have a future to plan like I used to before.
Right.
And that's something that's new for me that I'm trying to, you know, deal with.
Does the fact that you're sober help you with that? Like in terms of some spiritual surrender to what happened, you know, your safe?
Yeah. Well, I've always been a terrible surrenderer and a turn it over person.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I did it. Like I literally started a company and then handed it over to other people to run. And it's my only financial asset. So it's not like – I mean, I own my 2011 Hyundai Elantra.
Congratulations.
I own that.
Yeah.
I don't own anything else. So – it was a big deal for me to turn the entire thing that had become my identity and my financial everything to other people to run. So I'm just still like coasting off of the wave of that.
Well, but I mean that by very definition, you are not a bad turner over. And I'd like to keep using that word and you should copyright it because I might steal it. You're not. I mean, you've done like the biggest thing of somebody I know in terms of a tangible turnover.
But in my daily life, I'm not really good at it.
Maybe this will help.
That was like, it was a, you know, I mean, it's not even 2 months and it was a big bang thing of like, okay, I'm the wrong person to run the company. It's better for me and for everyone if I'm not doing this anymore. And so I'm just going to do it. And I did it. But now, like on a daily basis, I'm terrible.
What are you doing all day?
It depends. Working on
new things.
No new things.
Working on yourself.
I'm working on myself. You know, I'm getting life insurance. I set up a trust. I've done a little bit of traveling. I'm doing 90 and 90. I started that
nice.
6 days ago.
Have you ever done that before?
I did when I came in. I did 86 and 89, and then my daughter was born on the 90th day.
Right.
But I haven't done
what
it
What about
since.
87 and 88?
I know I'm saying I did 86 out of 89.
Oh, I see.
I missed 3 days, three meetings.
We forgive you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I speak for nobody. I barely speak for myself.
So I haven't done anything like that since, and I'm sober now almost – you know, 2 years and 9 months. So it's been 2.5 years.
And you told me January 3rd, 4th is your date.
Mm-hmm.
So what was – okay, let's go back. I know so little actually
okay.
about
yeah.
you. No, that's good.
Yeah.
It's better than okay. Where are you born? Where are you from?
I'm from Chicago, outside of Chicago.
Okay.
Rolling Meadows.
Okay. Yeah. Never heard of it. I'm sure it's wonderful.
Suburb of Chicago.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister. She's 16 months younger than me. She's still there.
And so you grew up and what – first of all, like what were you like as a kid? And second of all, like when did you first like drink or anything like that?
Sure. I guess I was pretty gregarious as a kid. I was a ham, mm-hmm. a center of attention. I was the best baseball player and I was always in like the school plays and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely
saw – Well, those
saw
don't it. Go together really.
I mean, yeah, I went to a small Catholic school, mm-hmm. and so everybody did that stuff. But I would do like the solo and make a – jerk out of myself and
oh, but okay, so you could
tap dancing,
you could sing and tap dance
until puberty. Yeah, absolutely.
Then, like, did you take lessons? Like, one isn't born with. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah,
you took tap lessons.
Yeah, it wasn't just me though. Like,
right.
They sent someone in and said, okay, we're going to be doing this show, and so every day after school for however two hours,
shuffle off the buffalo.
Absolutely.
My tap dancing was limited to at Trinity College where I went. There was we were doing Anything Goes, and I had lots of dance background, which is how I got into any play. It was not my voice, and we did a dance audition, and then they handed us a piece of paper and they said, "Can you tap?" And all you had to do was check yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting with this girl from my hall, and we're like, "Well, if they're asking, it must be pretty easy." So we both check yes, and we got the two tap dancing parts. And the interesting thing is, it's Mary McCormick who went on to great fame.
Yeah, yeah.
This was her debut. And we taught ourselves in the hall.
Yeah.
We went and bought tap shoes and figured out shuffle off the buffalo.
Right.
So, but you had actual training.
I mean, no. Like, I don't want to overstate it.
Okay.
I had they outsourced training that was sent to us.
Yeah.
And I learned how to tap. And then I got on stage and I performed. But it wasn't a big deal.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I did a lot of activities and I was involved in stuff. And I was always kind of social in that regard.
So you were a very first child.
I was first child, yes.
And so when did you first drink?
I remember having a drink probably like seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
It was a friend's had a sister who was old enough to have her own apartment. And so we stayed over. It was a sleepover. And it was me and these two kids from seventh grade. And we played quarters with beer. It was
great
Budweiser,
game.
You know. We didn't. It was one of those like you don't know what you're doing. So it's whatever you saw on TV or movies or heard about. They smoked. I didn't. And I don't know if I had even a full beer.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember drinking. But it didn't have any impact on me. Like, it's not like I sit here now today and think like, oh, yeah, that was the first time and I remember it. And there were fireworks. It was nothing like that. The first time I remember really drinking was at my uncle's wedding in Virginia. I was 16 and I had – one of my uncles kept feeding me amaretto sours.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, I couldn't get enough. It was just more, you know, more and more and more. But then I didn't drink again.
Question, how intense was the puking that night?
It was bad. Yeah.
It did it happen at the wedding? Or
at the wedding,
yeah.
After the wedding, the next day. Really, though, my whole life up until I was 22, I was the annoying guy who never drank and lectured everybody about it.
Ugh.
Like, I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I was a virgin. I was like total straight edge.
Were you lecturing people about keep holding on to their virginity?
No,
too?
Not that. Just smoking and drinking and drugs. I would lecture people and tell them not to do it.
And so you didn't. So even though you had this amazing experience at 16, you had no desire to repeat it?
No, none.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think we were at the wedding and it was fun and it was like, you know, my family was kind of like involved, but it wasn't something that you were supposed to do. And I felt like, I didn't do things I wasn't supposed to do for the most part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and that included that.
And was it a drinking household or did your parents not really drink?
My dad drank. My mom never drank, but I mean, my dad's not an alcoholic. It wasn't like he drank like that. Irish Catholic family, but there's not a ton of drinking in our family.
So there's no alcoholism anywhere?
There's one great uncle died of alcoholism. But I mean, you know, my mom has like 150 cousins or 160 cousins. And I want to say like there's maybe one or two instances of clear like that person's got a problem.
So you guys could essentially go Guinness Book style. Like we're the biggest Irish family without alcoholics. I mean, that's kind
I'm
of
sure
crazy.
There's people who are that I don't know about.
But like even that it's not family lore yet. Although so much denial in our previous generation.
Absolutely.
That who knows? You know,
who
I,
knows?
I think both my mom's parents were alcoholics, but like she doesn't think that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're 100%. All I'm saying is that like we didn't have any like obvious train wrecks. There was the one guy who like who had a problem that we know.
Yeah. So then you were in college.
Yes.
And you decided to try it again despite your lecturing.
Well, no, actually, it wasn't college. It would have been after college.
So you never drank in college?
No, I drank one night. My 21st birthday, I had friends came over to my house because I didn't want to go to a bar because I didn't drink, yeah, and brought booze and I drank some and I got drunk. But again, like it was a one-time thing and I didn't do it after that.
Where did you go to college, by the way?
Northern Illinois University.
Okay. So you graduate and what were you doing?
I moved to New York,
mm-hmm,
and New York City. And I was sharing a one-bedroom, 103rd and West End,
mm-hmm,
with two other people.
Mm-hmm.
It was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But I started drinking when I was there.
Good reason. I lived on – right after college on 86th – well, and wait, were you West End or East End?
West.
Okay, I was East End.
West End and Riverside.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so you've got these two roommates and you've probably got a railroad style apartment.
It was terrible.
Yeah. And so you're like, fuck, man, I need a drink.
You know what? I think it was social. I think I started dating this girl, mm-hmm, and she, you know, I mean, it wasn't even her. It's just like everyone went out. Everyone went out. And
yeah.
And I gave up the idea that I wasn't going to be that guy anymore.
Was it like an ego thing that you were that guy?
I'm sure at some point, it was part of my identity, uh-huh, was that I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do drugs. I was really obnoxious about it.
Like,
I feel bad for all the people who encountered that.
But yet these, you still had friends who came over on your 21st birthday. So were they just like,
yeah,
martyrs?
I don't, I mean, I guess I had a few other redeeming qualities apparently that people kept me around. But my now wife, actually, yeah, we grew up across the street from each other.
Okay, that's cute.
And she was a big part of my lecture tour. And
uh-huh,
we went to college together as well. And she, you know, she went out drinking and smoking whatever. And all I did was lecture her about it. And
so it's no
now
wonder.
We're married.
Were you not romantically involved all that time or you were?
We dated for like a cup of coffee.
Uh-huh.
And that was it in college.
Did you have the separate topic? Did you have any idea this was the woman you would ultimately
marry? Oh, absolutely. I fell in love with her Halloween night, 1986, when I went to her house trick-or-treating. And it just took me until I was 32 before
she would date you.
Before she would really date me.
Really?
Yeah.
Persistence.
Yeah. 8 years in between when I was married. I was married for 4 years during an 8-year period.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Then we reconnected.
So you could say that your first surrender was surrendering to drinking after being this pedantic, annoying, you know, teetotaler.
I think being in New York was helpful because I wasn't around all of the people I had been lecturing for all those years.
Right. You didn't have to look like a hypocrite.
Right, exactly.
It's like how
that would have been a big thing for me,
yeah,
to avoid the hypocrisy label.
Yeah, that's how people reinvent themselves in college. You just waited.
Yeah.
and so then you were – what were you doing with your life at that point?
I was working doing executive compensation. It's boring stuff.
What does that mean?
Figure out how to pay the top level people at public companies for the most part.
That sounds very useful in terms of starting a business one day. No?
No. It's called the second oldest profession. it's kind of like people hire you to then justify why they should get paid more. And that's why I didn't last very long in that
right,
field. Because
right.
I was young and I had done some work with people who I didn't really respect, and they expected me to justify why they would get like $20 million stock option grant. And
right.
I would say, no, I don't think you deserve it. And so that didn't work out. But that was the first 2 years of my post-college life. And then I ran my own baseball card trading business.
Okay.
This was the early days.
Okay.
Yeah, the early days of eBay. So I basically created this little business where you had like – the top 10 dealers in the country. They would do $1 million deals all the time. And they would go and say, buy 50 cases. This is so boring. I'll talk fast. 50 cases of 1989 Topps traded so that they could take out all the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards, get them graded, sell them, and they would make a 20-30% profit. But they would then have all the other cards. So they'd have 5,000 each of every other 131 cards in the set. They were selling them to QVC and Hope Shopping Network for 3 cards for a penny. Big kind of bulk deals. So I came in and kind of became a market maker where I introduced people I knew who wanted lots of high quality, lots of cards and didn't want to have to spend their whole lives finding 5,000 of them. So I connected these basically like penny stock investors with the dealers so that the dealers could sell the cards for 20 cents a piece instead of, you know, 1/3 of a cent. So I ran that. I kind of built that business into this little thing, and I ran that for like 2.5 years.
Wow. I barely understood the words you were saying, but that's fascinating that you could do that.
I couldn't take it though. Because that's when I first exhibited alcoholism, like really. This was 1997. So there's no such thing as a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So my entire business was providing liquidity. And if you don't provide liquidity, then you're worthless. So that meant I had to always be next to my computer. Mm-hmm. Because if I didn't respond to emails, I would lose my customers. Mm-hmm. So I literally was in an apartment in Hoboken, New Jersey, and I would almost never leave except to go to liquor store, buy like a 6-pack of Newcastle, and I would sit there and drink and work on auctions and deal with my clients. And I did that way more than I realized at the time. Mm-hmm. But I would drink a 6-pack like most nights.
And so that progression, were you conscious of, you know, you were?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I quit for 2 weeks to prove
that you didn't have
that
a problem.
I didn't have a problem at the behest of a friend of mine.
So you were like 25 at this point?
No, I was 23.
Okay.
24.
And you were drinking alone?
Sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would go out with people too, but I didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever do drugs?
No, I smoked pot like twice, and both times it put me to sleep. And one time I threw up, so I never did that.
This is not what I. This is a very unusual story, don't you think? From most.
From what I hear now, like after the fact, I'm 40, and I hear people in meetings. Yeah, I mean, the fact that I've only smoked pot twice and have never tried any other drug by itself is a fairly
And
rare
that you missed
instance.
Those years from 12 to 22 when a lot of us were, you know,
and
really
I started smoking
it.
At 22. Like all this stuff, when people start stopping is when I started doing it.
You don't still smoke, do you?
No, I quit smoking a year and a half ago.
Nice, nice. Out of all the things I've quit, that is the most, like, I am so disgusted with myself for having done it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. And I really wish I had not taken – I got advice when I first quit drinking that you quit the things that are going to kill you first, right? That mm-hmm. kind of – whatever that advice is. And so I had quit smoking. Mm-hmm. And I went back to it the day I quit drinking based on advice I had gotten. And if I had just waited like 2 days, I never would have started again because it was way easier for me to quit drinking than it was to quit smoking. I wound up smoking for another year. That I never should have or would have.
I mean, like most intelligent people, I don't know, don't say that. Don't be like, okay, you should pick up smoking because it'll make it easier to not drink or whatever they say. I mean, I justified it because when I got sober, I smoked like 1.5 packs a day and I was very happy that nobody was telling me to quit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really did help me through my first 9 months.
Right, but you wouldn't tell someone to go back to it after you had quit. No, I mean, look, the people I know in sobriety now, not a one of them would give me that advice.
Right.
But, you know, on day one and you walk in and
there's no screening process.
I was there with like one guy, a mutual friend of ours who brought me there. But like I start talking to people and
he wouldn't give you that advice.
An old timer said like you should do this.
Yeah.
And I did. And it was foolish, but I did it.
I quit through Nicotine Anonymous.
Really?
Yeah. That's a real thing.
I did hypnosis.
Oh, with Carrie Gaynor?
Yes.
I've been to him. And it worked?
I mean, I don't like to give it credit, but because I was ready.
But. Yeah. No, but I went for something else and he couldn't help me. But like everyone I know who did hypnosis quit through him.
Yeah. I'm not going to really talk about that.
I'm curious after the mics are off.
Yeah. But I don't smoke.
And yeah.
I don't. Want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was watching, I don't remember what it was, a movie or a TV show recently where like they lit a cigarette and it was the first time since I quit where it looked like a good idea to me.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then it was gone. So I'm lucky that way.
I don't think I've had that. And I quit 13 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I have.
That's amazing.
I'm so repulsed by it. Like the first 3 weeks, I just was out of my mind. I went into Coffee Bean trying to order breakfast, and I walked out with an egg salad sandwich, which is like just how crazy I was. Like yeah. I tried to get a muffin and I was like, egg breakfast. Like I was, and I would go to meetings and I would, if they didn't call on me, and I'd go up and yell at them, you know, I was like not okay.
Yeah.
And then after 3 weeks I was fine.
Yeah.
And was like, if I'd known how easy this is, I would have done it 10 years before.
And I read Alan Carr's book too, which is how I had quit the first time.
Yeah.
Which I recommend to anyone out there.
I've heard about that. I didn't do it.
Yeah. The Easy Way to Quit Smoking by Alan Carr.
The problem with Nicotine Anonymous is that people, if you see them, they're like, you're going to smoke again if you don't come back to me. It's like, well, it's been 13 years and I glare at people who smoke. So right. as I walk by.
It's
so
different, isn't it? It's different than drinking.
For me, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I still have smoking dreams sometimes. Do you have drinking dreams?
Mm-mm.
You've never had one.
I don't think so. I don't remember any.
Uh-huh.
No.
So the drinking, you're at a six-pack a night, and then what happened?
It just kept going. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, at this point, yeah, I started when I was 22, and I quit when I was 37.
Mm-hmm.
So 15, 16 years. In the beginning, right away, like I said, I said to a friend, like, I think, like, I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you're just drinking like we're all, you know, like everyone does. Why don't you just see if you can quit for 2 weeks and then you'll know. And he was like a year older. So I thought he knew what he was talking about, which is ridiculous. And so I quit for 2 weeks and it was easy. And
was it?
Yeah, of course. I didn't go out and I didn't drink. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I was the guy who didn't do it for all those years and had no problem not doing it.
Yeah.
It was when I started, I had a hard time stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was identifying as like felt bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just spent the next 15 years in various degrees of, you know, on again, off again, but mostly on again, drinking and smoking.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the consequences?
Well, I devolved into a place where for probably about 2 years when I was in Chicago, I moved back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I had no money.
Mm-hmm.
I had no job. I was unemployable. People didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the outside looking in, my parents, I mean, to this day, I don't know if they really think that I'm an alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
but it prevented me from working. I couldn't keep a job.
So you moved back home and in with them?
No, I had my own apartment in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just go to the bar. And the way I paid for rent and food and whatever was I played money for pool for money and cards. And I just supported myself playing pool for money for the most part for like 2 years. I mean, supported myself on a pathetic lifestyle, but I did – I made it
bar
made it work.
Were part of your diet?
Yeah. $1.50 Schlitz cans.
Yeah.
Jake's Pub on Clark in Chicago. And just the kindness of strange, you know, somebody who you didn't know at the bar would have a big pizza delivered, and the next thing you know, they're like letting you have a slice. And just winning a lot of pool. I was very good at it.
Yeah. You have a lot of skills that I didn't know about.
I'm a barroom Olympian, as they say.
Well, and so in terms of like the gambling thing, you don't have an alcoholic relationship with that, or do you?
I quit gambling. I have some sort of a problem with gambling, but it was always when I was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I never had a problem with gambling when I was sober, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't gambled in like 7 years, and I won't.
What was the gambling you were doing?
I would do – well, there was the cards.
Yeah.
With people I knew, poker,
mm-hmm.
with people I knew. And then there was the pool, and
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was betting on games. There was going to the casino. I mean, kind of like anything you would imagine
mm-hmm.
I did in different degrees at different times.
Would you – and you – what's the most you ever won?
Oh, geez. I won like $9,000 in a couple hours in Vegas at a blackjack table, and then – lost it all and then lost another 5,000.
Yeah.
Completely shit-faced.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the worst. That was the last night. I haven't gambled since then.
And so
I walked away from $1,000 too, by the way, because my partner in Earwolf, Scott Aukerman, he wanted to bet me $1,000 on how many seasons there were of the TV show Bored to Death. And I knew that there were three. I had just seen the third season. And he's like, there's only two. And he's best friends with Zach. And so he's like, I will bet you $1,000 that there's only two seasons. But I had promised my wife that I would gamble again. Yeah, like either you gamble or you don't.
Paid?
Oh, yeah. Scott's a, if you're listening, he's a man of his word. He's a complete, like, upstanding guy. He would have paid for sure.
Still, even if you're an upstanding guy, like, that kind of a bet, like, you throw out.
No, he was dead serious.
Okay.
He was dead serious. But so I do not gamble under any circumstance.
And so what led to this January 4th decision?
My wife had wanted me to quit. Probably a year before that, almost 11 months before
Which
that.
Is ironic when your relationship started with you lecturing her.
Yeah, and she drank – she was with an alcoholic for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So from college, like she broke up with him to date me, broke up with me to go back to him,
mm-hmm.
moved out. They moved from Chicago to LA together. They were together for 13 and a half years, and they broke up 6 months before she and I reconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So like he was like – the whole thing
mm-hmm.
during that whole time. And he was an alcoholic. And in the beginning, she didn't identify for whatever reason that I was.
Well, because you were probably not as bad, quote as bad.
I was pretty bad.
You were?
I mean, I remember one night I went out with some friends and I didn't realize this, they were doing coke.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like that guy, like I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
People didn't tell me, I didn't look for signs.
Right.
And so I'm trying to keep up with these guys. And I was really gone by like 8 p.m. We had started at like 4. It was Oscar Sunday. And next thing I knew, I'm at the Brown Derby,
mm-hmm.
which is now a Chase Bank on Hillhurst. Mm-hmm. And it was like midnight. And I couldn't remember I could barely stand, and I left. And they let me leave. They were new friends. They just let me leave. And then the next day, my wife is sitting there and like, what's going on? I'm like, nothing. She's like, how do you feel? I'm like, I'm pretty hungover. She's like, how did you get home last night?
And like, I said, no idea.
I said, a cab. And she's like, no, I had to pick you up from a 7-Eleven.
Uh-huh.
You called me from a payphone and said that you were at a 7-Eleven, but you didn't know where. And I had to find you.
Well, not to mention you forgot you had a cell phone, maybe.
Did I even have a cell phone back then? I don't think I did.
Wait, I thought it was 3 or 4 years ago.
No, this was 2007.
Okay. You had a cell phone.
You asked about, right, my wife.
Okay, yeah. So there were two sobrieties.
No. No, sorry. Let me go back.
Okay.
The reason why my wife should have known was that she had been with an alcoholic for all these years. And then within 6 months of me and her getting together, she had to pick me up from a 7-Eleven and I couldn't remember where I was or that it even happened.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's when the conversation started about like what's going on. And I was able to kind of get myself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just started this thing of like the next couple of years of – you know, all the rules. I'm not going to drink during the week and I'm not going to, and I'm only going to have vodka, not rum. And, you know, all of that stuff. And so finally it got to a point where she's like, you can't do this anymore. And it took a lot to get her there because she's like a classic, like loving enabler.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically for 11 months, I was kind of like, quote unquote, dry.
Mm-hmm.
I barely drank, but I did. Like there were several instances that I did and hid it from her and then was like, okay, well, she's going to find out and just dealt with it. And like she got mad and whatever. But for those 11 months, that was like the worst for me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The trying to stop but not knowing how.
Yeah.
And not wanting to admit I had a problem.
Yeah, that's the worst.
And trying to find like – I would plot like – oh, in 2 months and 8 days, it'll be my birthday. And then I'll be able to figure out a way to drink that day where like I won't really get in that much trouble.
Right.
You know, and then have 2 months and 8 days of like agony.
Oh, no. Agony thinking about it?
Yeah. Like how come it's not here yet?
You know?
I mean, I think I was the worst I ever was that year. of trying to quit and either not drinking or hiding it.
I mean, I had that experience, but it was with cocaine. It was with everything. I did 10 days of sobriety at one point, and it was not easy. And I took, pain pills and Ambien the whole time.
Right, yeah.
And was, insufferably telling everyone, it's my eighth day without alcohol, like they cared.
Yeah.
I had years where I would say, okay, well, I'm not going to do this cocaine anymore. And then I'd stop for 3 weeks or a month and be like, no, coke addict can stop.
Right.
I'll go back.
Yeah.
So would you have these periodic nights of drinking and be like, well, I got this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I told myself every lie there was.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I knew what was going on. I mean, I can't even tell you how many draft emails, because I would go into my email and I would write emails to myself,
mm-hmm.
either late those nights or early the next mornings, talking about like however I felt, the shame and the depression.
Wow.
Around it. And I would never send them there. So I just kind of like kept having, and I would explain to myself what had happened, how I had embarrassed myself or what I did that I was ashamed of. And like looking at that later, it's terrible. Like, and it was the same story every time. It was, I felt the same. I did the same things. It was just Groundhog Day over and over again.
And were you doing anything interesting, or were you just, you were staying home and drinking and then doing things?
I would go, like I had a friend who I would go to his place. We would go out sometimes with other friends. I would bar hop. So towards the end, like I would say in the last 2 years when I was drinking, like I would go to the Roost, which is a place mm-hmm. in Los Feliz at noon when they open.
Mm-hmm.
Completely like didn't hide it from anyone. Like mm-hmm. say to my wife, like, I'm going to go work from the bar this afternoon
mm-hmm.
and get some work done. No one will be able to bother me. We're going to do some Excel spreadsheets. I don't need the internet. And I would go and I would like have two, drinks, mixed drinks from the Roost. And you're like drunk.
Yeah.
I mean, those are strong drinks they make there. And then I would go to Club TG and there'd be new people there, but the same people,
yeah.
not new, but like different from the ones at the Roost.
Right.
And then I'd wind up at Edendale where my buddy was bartending. And the next thing you know, it's like 7:30.
Yeah.
And you've been drinking for 7 hours and your night's over.
Right.
That happened plenty.
And so with these emails that you sent yourself, but you never sent them. You left them in draft.
I just left them in draft, yeah.
Sort of like how we're supposed to show restraint of pen and tongue these days, and we're supposed to do that with emails we want to fire off to people we're positive have
yeah.
wronged us.
Right. Yeah, I was doing it to myself, yeah.
Except the problem with that is that they're in your draft so that you can – it doesn't matter
if you sent
it because it's there.
And I wrote it, so yeah.
Yeah.
It was all one big – yeah, mental masturbation, really.
And so then what happened that brought you to the point?
I had hidden that I drank from my wife a couple times
mm-hmm.
During that year. And I think that's what really started to get to me. That's one thing. Another thing was that I know we're not going to talk about names, but I was out.
Say their first names, please.
I was out with some people who mm-hmm. I really respect mm-hmm. professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they asked me if I wanted a drink and I said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And smoke and said yes. And I embarrassed myself. One of the people was getting followed around that day mm-hmm. by a writer from Time Magazine
mm-hmm.
who was doing like one of those a cover story
yeah.
on this guy. And it was like, follow him around for 24 hours and then write the cover story.
Yeah.
And so like I'm the guy who was like shit faced.
Right.
For 3 hours of this 24 hours, I am like shit faced with this guy and a bunch of other people. And I was petrified that when it came out,
it would talk about that. But did it?
No, of course not. Like it was not something that would be important to the story. But I was paranoid, and it's like they weren't friends. These people, they were like professional acquaintances.
You were there because they were professional acquaintances.
Yeah, like it wasn't weird that I was there, but it's not like they're. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, there's a huge difference between friends,
yes,
and people that you're friendly with,
yes,
right. So I embarrassed myself in front of people who weren't friends, but that I liked.
Yeah.
And it could have been very high profile.
Mm-hmm.
And even the threat of that really fucked me up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing. The hiding slash like having to come clean to my wife was another thing. And then the last day. The last day was I started early.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't handle the fact the idea of not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I started drinking and I drank from probably like, I don't know, 8 a.m. until 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And at maybe like 2 p.m, I was like, I'm done. It's over. And I called a friend who I knew was sober.
Mm-hmm.
And
our mutual friend?
No, our mutual friend, Jake.
Uh-huh.
And he was in New York at the time. And mm-hmm. I said, I don't think I can do this anymore. And he kind of talked me through finishing my last drink
mm-hmm.
and going somewhere after that.
Uh-huh.
And then that was it. The gig was up. It was so bad that I couldn't pretend anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had been hiding it slash, you know, trying to unsuccessfully stop. And I knew my wife was pregnant. She was 6 months pregnant.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I knew like she would leave me if I kept drinking.
Mm-hmm.
She would.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to quit before the baby came.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did.
And was it immediate? So you went to, can I just say you went to a meeting? Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to a meeting.
Matter where.
Yeah.
In the county of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah. And you had you ever been to one of those before?
Once. I had gone once before, the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
And I was – I'm an atheist. Mm-hmm. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to do AA.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in any of this like religious cult crap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and I heard the parts of it I wanted to hear to prove that I shouldn't be there.
Of course, yeah.
And I didn't go back.
Yeah.
But then this time it was different and I was like – I did surrender. I said I can't do this
by myself. And what did you do about all the God stuff?
I mean to this day – I struggle as much as I think probably most atheists struggle, which is not that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's kind of a bit of a crock to say that it's like God as you understand him. And then all – here's the thing. The literature is written in a holy way.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who went to Catholic school, I can tell you that it is written in a holy way, which is something that I – as an atheist, I would prefer – it to be purely spiritual and mm-hmm. not holy.
Mm-hmm.
So to say like, oh, well, it doesn't really mean the God that you don't want it to mean, but then have it always kind of like the tone and the reference of it to be the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But like, who gives a shit? I'm sober.
Right.
You know, like I'm not hung up on it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God I let that go.
Did you let that go on January 4th or did that take?
Yeah, I had to.
Yeah.
I had to, or I wouldn't have been able to sit there and take anything positive in, I would mm-hmm. have been on guard for like the wrong word or the wrong tone. And are you really trying to get me to believe something I don't believe in? And you know, it was such a part of my who I was, my identity was that like I didn't buy into this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big part of it is like ego that I didn't want to have to say that I was in this program that people assume is very kind of like about God.
So, and you couldn't move the way you had when you had been lecturing people about not drinking.
Yeah, no, you know? I was like stuck.
You were stuck in LA. So these were the same people. And of course, those people didn't judge you.
No.
Because they're just like, cool, I'm glad you're getting help.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all in your own head
yeah.
as to how people are going to react. And that's never the case.
Yeah, yeah. So, and so what about, do you do step work even though?
I'm terrible. I am on the fourth step.
Mm-hmm.
I have been for 17 months probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really working it.
Well, it's hard to do the third step as an atheist or no?
Well, so I got over it. Like mm-hmm. it's hard, not as an atheist, as an alcoholic atheist.
Okay.
Like I put up so many roadblocks. Like, well, what about that word? And like there was too much of I just have a hard time going along.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was – I did though. Like mm-hmm. I was able to kind of put that to the side and mm-hmm. say this isn't about the God that I don't believe in from St. Colette. This is about something else. And I was able to get past it. But it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Do you have just like a real patient sponsor who's like, cool, 18 yeah. months.
Yeah.
Maybe month 19.
I have to find a new sponsor. I have a great sponsor, but I'm not engaging to do the work the way I need to. And I think that I just need kind of a fresh start.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this might be impossible to summarize, but how has your life changed?
It's amazing. It's so great. I am always in gratitude of mm-hmm. the fact that I'm not lying. When you're an alcoholic and you're active, mm-hmm. everything is about that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're either drinking or you're recovering from drinking or you're plotting how you can drink again.
Yeah.
You know,
like, or gleeful anticipation.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing and horrible regret. Yeah.
It's all this like you're in a constant state of like one of those places.
Right.
And it's all like, how do I spend time with the kind of people who are going to let me do this and in the places where I need to be so that I can do it? It consumed every waking moment of my entire life. So the fact that I'm not killing myself, that I, you know, can engage with the world in a healthy way, it's just my company would have been gone. I wouldn't have a business. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have a wife, which means I wouldn't have a kid. I mean, I have a kid, but mm-hmm. my relationship with her would be very different.
Yeah.
It gets ugly when you're getting older and it's progressive and it's getting worse. And I really feel like if I had kept drinking, I don't think I'd be here. I think I probably would have just like offed it.
Really? You
know? I mean, I never had any suicidal thoughts, but I can see
how it would have gotten there.
How I would have gotten there. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you wake up and you're like, woohoo, here we go the day? Or do you struggle with negativity? Or how is that?
I struggle. Yeah, I'd say I struggle with negativity. I see how things can be improved. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. So whatever is – if I do something well, I don't like give myself credit for it. I just accept it as like I should do that well.
Yeah.
Let's focus on what I don't do well.
Yes.
So that's kind of the way I am with everything, which could be considered negative.
Well, I mean, it's extremely effective when it comes to getting things done and mm-hmm. it's extremely ineffective when it comes to feeling good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you're not even a Jew. That's how we're raised, Jews.
Right. Well, I mean, Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, less like
stone's
that.
Throw.
Yeah. I mean, I was at this Jew thing. And
do your listeners know
about Reboot?
It's literally the secret society of Jews who run Hollywood.
I know.
It's a real thing.
Yes and no. I don't know. I haven't met those members yet.
It's real.
It's real.
You're in it. I've seen.
I don't run Hollywood.
I saw the PDF like.
Oh, did. Yeah.
Packet. And it was like like it explains that the purpose is to mold and shape the media with Jewish ethics and values.
I didn't see that part.
Oh, yeah. It spells it out. I mean,
just looked at the names.
Yeah.
The people in
it's
it.
A very impressive list of
it's
names.
It's a very impressive list of names. I, you know, our mutual friend got me in.
Yeah.
But what was my point? Oh, yeah, yeah. I convened at Reboot, the Park City, you know, wire now I can't remember. Oh, why are Jews chronically unhappy? And what we determined was first of all, everyone was convening like Israel and Palestine. Like, and I have this like – somebody convened why are Jews good in bed. So I didn't have the most low class,
right?
You know, unintellectual one. But it's just like this, you know, this belief that, you know, you have to get things done and happiness is not really that relevant.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It really is.
But I mean, I do think alcoholic thinking can go in that way where, you know, it's like putting the whip on yourself. It's just like, you got to get it done.
Right.
And like how you feel about it, be damned.
Is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm struggling with now is that I'm almost 2 months after having like left the business and I'm doing the 90-90. I'm going to start exercising, I swear.
Fun.
This week.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Literally, here's my plan. I'm going to walk up and down our hill.
Uh-huh.
What for hill? Like a half an hour.
Are you Runyon Hill?
Or? No, we're over like Canyon.
Okay.
Like past Gelson's Griffith Park.
Yeah.
I'm just going to walk up and down the hill for a half an hour. And then I'm going to lay on the floor of my bedroom and like stretch and like hold my arms up. And like, that's going to be the beginning of my strength training.
Yeah.
Because I'm so out of shape that I'm literally going to lie on the floor and not have the entirety of my body touching the floor. And that's going to be my resistance strength training. I had a personal trainer I went to once and I couldn't move for like 4 days. So I'm scared off of that.
Yeah. 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 Those are, I hate
it. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And he's in all these like commercials and like NCIS stuffs. And so I see him all the time. So I'm always feeling really guilty about it.
You can't do a trainer in LA. That's going to be a risk you're going to run.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I have to focus on the fact that like, it's okay. I'm trying to give myself permission to do nothing for a year, to not, you know, I was going on a week long vacation with my wife and she's like, you should like read a fiction book. Cause I've only read business books for like 10 years. I haven't read fiction. And I'm like, okay. So I found someone recommended a book, City of Thieves, great book if you haven't read it. And I got it and I said, okay, so like I have it on my Kindle. Do I annotate it here? Like, do I publish my, like, do I write up like a book review and publish it? And she's like, no, you just read it.
Right.
You just read it. And I'm like, well, what do I do after? Like,
as a result.
Right. I have to build.
Yeah.
Like I always have to be building.
Yeah.
And so I can't do something without like putting the brick that came. You know what I mean?
Yes, totally.
And she's like, you're so fucked up. Just read the fucking book. And I did. And it was a really good book. So I'm trying to give myself permission to do things that don't require a result.
Yes.
And at the same time, be a little healthier.
Yeah. How do you do on watching movies? Or does that feel like you're accomplishing something because you're adding to your knowledge?
I go to see movies by myself all the time now.
Okay.
It's like me going to the bar. It's a very big like escape thing for me.
Yeah.
Just go to the Arclight and I'll get, you know, like milk duds and sit there and watch whatever's there.
I'm
not judgmental about what it is. Good. You know, like if it's got a score of 20 on Rotten Tomatoes, I'll go and be like, I hope I really think it's a 32. That'll be a win.
Yeah. And, I just watched Jobs last night, which got like a
– I like that movie.
Oh, my God. It was so good. And it got a horrible score.
Ashton Kutcher actually did a really good job of being Steve Jobs, as far as I was concerned.
And speaking of Kindles, I downloaded the Steve Jobs biography right afterwards. That's how into it I was.
That's pretty good, too. You're not going to like him afterwards.
I hated him after the movie, too.
Yeah, of course. Right, yeah.
So this is fantastic. Is there anything else about addiction or recovery that you want people to know? Maybe people who are – well, I thought it was interesting when you were talking about the emails you would send yourself. You know, my vision for the site I created was it's for people who are fucked up at 3 a.m. and are like, should I kill myself or what's this?
Yeah.
So and I do get lots of emails from people who say that they heard this and it changed things for them.
That's really great because I mean, I went through that. I wish that it existed when I was.
Me too.
Because you would be in that place where you're so – I mean, you can only watch so many episodes of Intervention.
Yeah.
You know, you're like desperate for a connection to something that 'll make you feel better that has to do with sobriety. You don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And usually you're still drunk when you're – When you're looking. I mean, the quizzes, how many of the quizzes? Oh my God.
You did those? I never did those.
Oh, they always came back that, and this is total bullshit, but that I was an alcohol abuser, not an alcoholic.
Well, you know how what they say is take that quiz like a year into sobriety and you're going to get a different score because your honesty level is a little different.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, no, I mean, I feel like I've done a poor program. You know, I did 90 and 90 when I first started, and then I basically did like probably one a week for the next 2.5 years, if that. There were times when I'd get busy with traveling and I didn't do out of town meetings. I wasn't here. So I haven't done a lot of step work. I was a treasurer once at one meeting for like 3 months and probably half the time I was out of town. Like I'm terrible. I don't feel qualified to kind of like speak to anyone about sobriety.
That's the whole point is you've stayed sober and you don't have to be like a perfect A student in AA to do that.
Right.
And I think that's really helpful because, I mean, okay, so you were the treasurer and you were out of town. There are people who are the treasurer and steal the money Do you know what I mean? There are people who go to the meetings and yell at people for, you know what I mean? You're there, you're listening, you're doing 90 and 90. Like it's working.
It is, but I feel fortunate. Like I feel like it's easier for me than it's been for other people that I know. Mm-hmm. Like once I stopped, once I really stopped, like I don't sit around. Like I'm not the guy who has to cross the street because there's a bar up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But do you really know that guy? Do you know anyone really in that position?
I mean, I know probably one or two people. But yeah, you're right. It's a rare thing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like for most of us, something happens. And for me, it seemed spiritual where that desire was removed the same way my tonsils were removed when I was 22. It feels like that. It was just like, oh, okay. This thing, it's right in front of me all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah. So, living's hard.
Living's hard.
Not drinking is not hard.
Being an alcoholic in general is hard for me. Like all the things that go along with that, that I didn't realize about myself, a lot of it's tied to the stereotype of being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But being sober, I don't struggle with really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I quit drinking and then a year later I quit smoking and then 6 months after – no. Sorry. I quit drinking. 6 months later, I quit caffeine.
Oh.
I had a prostate problem, so I had to get off of caffeine.
Okay.
And so I'm still off of that. And then 6 months after that, I quit smoking. I've quit gambling. Mm-hmm. Like I've gotten good at quitting things.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't really impact. Like it's not a thing where like, oh my God, I wish I could go play cards or, oh my God, I wish I could go have a cigarette. It doesn't hit me like that.
And it gets easier with everything you quit. Except the cigarettes. The cigarettes was
cigarettes
harder
are
for
a
me
bitch.
Than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would never, ever, ever have a cigarette again because then.
Yeah. I don't know if I have another quit smoking in me.
Yeah, right?
3 weeks. Yeah. Well, I cannot thank you enough for doing this. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. I hope it was partially interesting.
The people are going to – they're going to love it. And I like that I got to know you in this way because I didn't know any of this.
A lot of people only know probably 30% of what I said. So
exclusive material here on After Party Pod.
I guess so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.
Not your everyday alcoholic run-of-the-mill story. Am I right? Am I right? No alcoholism in the family. Drinking late, no drugs, pot a couple times, but that just goes to show you it takes all kinds. I hope you love Jeff Ulrich. I hope you loved this podcast. Please subscribe, give us reviews. Love you. See you next time.